Hey guys, it's Dan. This is part four of our series on race, culture, and food. Who is this restaurant for? And the series is designed to be listened to in order, starting at part one. So if you're not up to date, I recommend that you go back, start with part one, and get on up here to part four whenever you're ready. I'll be waiting. Thanks. Oh, also one other thing. There is explicit language in this episode.
I mean, this is like the same thing I do in life. Like if I walk into a restaurant and it starts from how they turn and look at me, you know, and a lot of times in small towns, that can be, it's not that they're going to say, you ain't from around here, are you? But it does mean they might blink a couple times. You go, okay, like this is not necessarily, I don't know if I want to sit here for an hour, you know?
This is comedian W. Kamau Bell. He's black and he talks about race a lot in his act. He says he likes to perform in mostly white towns whenever he can. As he puts it, he goes where he's needed. He says it's kind of like Comics Without Borders. But that does mean when he's on the road, he tends to stick out, especially because he's 6'4".
It's really about like knowing when I walk in that like my presence is definitely going to like cause, you know, cast a shadow across the room, sometimes literally. Then it becomes on me to how badly do I want to eat here? And if I do want to eat here, it's that thing where you're sort of like, hi, everybody. Thanks for letting me eat here. Like you become super like aware of like how to sort of de-escalate the tension in the room, trying to like not calm things down, but just make sure people know that I'm here to have your delicious food you cook.
Today on The Sporkful, we conclude our series, Who Is This Restaurant For? I'll talk with comedian W. Kamau Bell, host of the CNN show United Shades of America and the podcast Politically Reactive. He'll discuss going out to eat when you're in an interracial marriage.
Honey, why don't you go use some of your white people skills to get their attention, to get us a table.
And as we have throughout this series, we'll talk about the signals restaurants send that tell you what kind of place it is and whether it's for you.
It is a place established for the type of person of color who knows how to travel easily in white spaces.
From WNYC Studios, this is The Sporkful. It's not for foodies, it's for eaters. I'm Dan Pashman. Each week on our show, we obsess about food to learn more about people. W. Kamau Bell calls himself a sociopolitical comedian. On his CNN show, United Shades of America, he has conversations about race with everyone from Florida retirees to prison inmates to a member of the KKK.
You're happier, I suspect, among your own world.
I am happy amongst my own people, but there are multiple races and multiple
So you're comfortable with a multiracial society?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
And I'm not. A lot of people are not.
Kamau lives in Berkeley with his wife, who's white. They've been together for 13 years, married for 7, and have 2 kids. In his stand-up, Kamau talks about having mixed-race kids.
I realized that there was a hidden benefit to having my daughter that I wasn't prepared for. It meant that every time I went to my in-law's house, I could bring a black person with me. You know what I'm saying? I created my own ally. Do you understand what I'm saying? Like a witness in case shit went down weirdly. Not everybody can do that. Like whenever I was at my in-law's house and something racially out of the box happened, like sweet potato pie, who put sweet potatoes in a pie? Do you believe these white folks? Do you believe these white folks? I know every year with this shit, I'm glad you finally came. Tiny high five.
One of Kamau's favorite stories about his wife happened on their honeymoon. They were out to eat, they ordered drinks and some calamari, and the calamari just wasn't very good. They left most of it on the plate.
So then we finish our drink and we get ready to leave, and the hostess is like, was there a problem with the calamari? And my wife goes, yeah, it just wasn't, we just didn't really enjoy it that much. And then for some reason the hostess decides, like, I don't know why you wouldn't enjoy it, it's the best calamari, blah, blah, blah. It goes off on some long list. And my wife goes, we are from California. As if to sort of say, we have a black belt in calamari. And really got quite like, we know what good calamari is. That was not good calamari. And it was funny. Literally, my wife saying we were from California made the woman go, okay, here's your money back. And we hadn't even asked for our money back. And
right.
I was just like, that's one of my most happy moments of my wife, because it was just like, I would have never thought to handle that situation that way. I would have let that woman yell at me as I sort of tucked my tail and walked out the door because I don't want to cause trouble. But my wife used her there was like two white ladies sort of squaring off. Like it was like she used her white lady privilege against this other white lady privilege.
I picture them like they each have a white lady ring that shoots a laser, and the lasers have like met halfway, and they're the colors are going back and forth. But then your wife pulls out the California card too, exactly. And then it pushes the hostess back against the wall, and she gives in.
Yes, and I stood there watching it like, oh, that's my wife. Like it was, we were newlyweds at that. I was like, that's the person you want. Like, right. You know, like she, yeah, because food is a big deal. I mean, you know, I'm sure everybody says that, but food is a big deal in our house. So
when you and your wife walk into a restaurant together, what are some of the signals that you are looking for? What are some of the things you notice about the kind of place it is, the kind of reception you're likely to receive?
There is a sense that if we're going to a nice place, and I feel like there's a sense of like they're super busy and also super uptight, I go, honey, why don't you go use some of your white people skills to get their attention, to get us a table, or to find out how long the wait is, you know?
Right.
I know if I go into those situations where it's a little bit of a buzzsaw, that there is a sense that just by my presence, I'm agitating it, you know, or they think I'm agitating it. You know, we live in Berkeley, you know, we live in the Bay Area, so there's not a lot of times we're going to go to a place out here and feel like that our mixed raceness is a problem. Like, there's times we go to restaurants out here where the fact that we're not Chinese is more of an issue. You know what I mean? Because I'm a big fan of going to places where, you know, not the menu's not all in English. Like, you know, like, and so therefore, I'm going to go in there really like sort of with kid gloves, but also I don't mind that. And I think we've done that more than we've gone to places in the Bay Area where it's like, what do we do about the fact that I'm white and you're black, you know?
I guess in that case, it's kind of like you're both others.
Yes, and it doesn't, although still, you know, white privilege is like, you know, a visa. They take it everywhere. So it's not, doesn't mean that she still might not be sent over to talk to the server, but it just means that, like, we're cutting a different path in the room than normally.
You talked about some of the situations where you'd be more likely to have your wife go handle a situation in a restaurant, whether it's a long wait or whatever, or issue with the server. Are there situations?
Yeah, any sort of like send this back, or I mean, not that I'm a complete punk, but there are like, you know, I think there are times when it's like, okay, now I'm going to use some male privilege. I think that's certainly the case that happens.
So but, can you give me an example of that?
There's sort of a weird dance of like, excuse me, my wife ordered this meal and she's not really liking it. She got through. Would it be okay? If not, I'm 6'4".
When you go into a restaurant, how aware are you of the diversity, the mix of the customers inside?
Again, we live in the Bay Area, so it's not that it's always diverse, but you always sort of there's a base level of like, well, they're not going to be hostile necessarily. Well, I say that, and then one time they were hostile. But so, in general, you don't walk in thinking things could go badly, but they do go badly. So. But I think there is a sense of, like, the more mixed a place is, the better I feel about it. So it doesn't mean if I go into a place that's all white people that I'm not going to eat there. But if you walk into a place where you can – where you literally feel like you can blend in, it just feels better. Because we live in Berkeley, and Berkeley is much whiter than Oakland. And so sometimes if we're going to Oakland, I'm like, oh, yeah. I'm like, we're gonna be able to disappear. And so, yeah, I certainly – if I walk into a restaurant and see, like, not even just black and white people, but lots of different people in there, you do feel like that – for me, the room is warmer, it's friendlier, it's smarter. Like, you know, there's better conversations in that room. The food's probably better in that restaurant because they have to serve a lot of different palates. And so for me, it's a sign of like, I feel like I'm in the right place when that happens.
Coming up, remember how Kamau said that one time at a restaurant in Berkeley, they actually were hostile to him? Well, we'll hear that story. It happened almost 2 years ago.
And yet I think about it, like, not every day, but it's like it's one of those things in your life that you sort of, like, this sort of rolls through the transoms of your mind.
That's coming up. Stick around. Let me just go ahead and open up the podcast portal. And who's here? Oh, it's my friends, Mike and Ian from How to Do Everything.
So the idea is there is an interdimensional portal through which we can connect our two shows.
Correct. We're in it right now.
We have a portal across space and time, and what we're using it for is to promote podcasts.
Yeah, I mean, really, when you think about it, it's not that different from a phone.
It does seem like a waste, Dan. It does seem like a waste.
Look, let's worry about that next time. For now, Let's just tell people to listen to your show.
I'd really rather not.
How to Do Everything. Get it where you get your other podcasts.
Welcome back to The Sporkful from WNYC Studios. I'm Dan Pashman. Please make sure you subscribe to this podcast wherever you get it. That way, you'll never miss an episode. Go ahead. You can hit subscribe right now while I'm talking. You don't even need to stop listening. Great. Thanks. Now, let's hear a little more of W. Kamau Bell's stand-up. In this bit, he talks about his wife learning to do their daughter's hair.
Yeah, so my wife, like, she, like, studied the website and had a binder and, like, was taking notes. And so it was funny to see the evolution of how my wife did hair. Like, at first, my daughter was 6 months old and her afro started to pop out. I'd walk in the morning and my daughter would be sitting between her knees and just bobbleheaded sitting there. And there's, like, a comb just stuck in her hair, angry. And there's, like, a computer open and a video playing. My wife's like, ah. I'm like, what happened? She's like, I sprayed water in her hair. I was like, no! You don't just spray water into a black person's hair without a plan. But now it's like 4 years later and I walk out there and there's no more computer, there's no more binder. She's got all the three different bottles of product she needs. There's no comb stuck in anybody's hair. I just walk out there and my wife's like,
So now Kamau's wife has the hair down. But as they navigate their life together, there are still a lot of challenges. Kamau told me about one incident in particular that took place at a restaurant.
There's a cafe in Berkeley called the Elmwood Cafe. It used to be an old school soda fountain. Now it's a very fancy coffee and breakfast shop. That is definitely the place that my wife likes a lot, and it's not the kind of place I would go to. But we had had breakfast there that one morning on my birthday just because she picked it. Because, again, I'm not worried about it. I'll eat again. So, like, I was like, yes, I'll go to this fancy coffee shop for my birthday breakfast because you want to go there. And so then I left, and then I was walked down the street, and I came back. She was there with a bunch of moms. She just had our second daughter, and it was her mom's group who was having lunch there. She's outside of the table. I walk up to them to talk to them. I just bought a book next door. I showed the book to my wife and her friends, and somebody on the inside of the restaurant knocked on the window and looked at me as if to say, get out of here. Like, I said scram at the time. I don't know what she said, but it was very much like, shoo. I sort of was, like, stunned by what just happened. Another server comes out and is sort of literally trying to give me the bum's rush, and my wife stepped up using her white lady privilege on this other white lady who was a server and was like, that's my husband. What are you doing? And she said, oh, we thought he was selling something. You know, we sort of exchanged some more words. Got up and left, and then we wrote this blog that went viral in the Bay Area.
So, and when exactly did it happen?
This was January 26th of 2015. It was my birthday. That's what I remember.
Right, right. So this is almost 2 years ago, and you say you still think about it very often. Why do you think it's had such a lasting impact on you?
Still, I think the reason why I still think about it is that we weren't able to rebuild it in a way that feels better. Like, we had a community meeting about it where we had, like, standing room only in a middle school auditorium for people who wanted to talk about how a lot of people of color who were like, this has happened to me, things like this happened to me. A lot of white people, like, I can't believe this happens in Berkeley, because, again, Berkeley is Berkeley. It's Bernie Sanders country. And we had the community meeting, and the owner of the cafe said, we're going to start a new program. We're going to be the agents of change, and first of all, in our neighborhood, then in our street, and then in the Berkeley, and we're going to get... And he sort of made all these promises, and he sort of looped me into them and said, Kamau's going to help us do this. And I was like, I am. And then, as often happens with people when the heat's gone, he just sort of retreated, and he stopped answering my emails. So it feels to me, still at this point, like kind of a failure of like, I just feel like someday I'm going to have to go back and do something here. But luckily for the Elmwood Cafe, the world is so horrible right now, it's just fallen lower on my list of things to do. But when I retire, and I have time on my hands, they're going to hear from me.
I want to jump in here for a sec. We did reach out to Elmwood Cafe and invited them on the show, but they declined to be interviewed. Over the phone, they said the bigger changes they hope to make after the incident with Kamau are taking longer than they expected. But they say they're still working on it. One change they did make already, they now discuss implicit bias in every new employee orientation. Okay, back to Kamau.
Basically, what happens is, like, it's not that people of color don't eat at the Elmwood Cafe, it's not that they don't serve them, but it is a place established for the type of person of color who knows how to travel easily in white spaces.
So you feel like the Elmwood Cafe is very intentional about the types of customers they're trying to attract. And it's only one portion of the people who live nearby.
Yeah, which, I mean, that's, you know, that's capitalism. The minute you set the prices at a certain level, you're saying we only want this type of people. And the minute you have the food choices you have, you're saying, like, you know, you're saying we only want stuff for a certain type of people. The minute you have breakfast that comes with salads, you know, like, you're saying you only want a certain type of person, which is all fine. But people all over who are wandering through that neighborhood who just maybe need to go to the bathroom or their kid wants a hot chocolate, they have to interact with your capitalism. And then you have to make sure that you can make that as seamless as possible. I'm not against restaurants setting the prices as high as they want to set them or creating the kind of atmosphere they want to create. But again, they have to remember they are creating this in the world and the greater world at large. And so you can't act like if the world comes into that place, that it's intruding on you.
Did that experience at Elmwood Cafe change your expectations or your approach when you go into other restaurants?
I guess it just reminded me, like, wherever you go, you're still black. so that there is this, like I said, I think I do, and I've written about this before too, that if I go into any place, I have to, like, how I carry myself, because there's a way to stand fully to 6'4", where people go, where you look 6'6", or there's a way to stand 6'4", where you look like you're, like, 6'1". And so I think that there's times when I sort of try to make sure I'm like, hey, like, sort of, like, not standing fully at attention to sort of just get through the world. And it doesn't believe that I'm not proud of myself or I don't believe in myself, which is the way to navigate the world. And so I certainly am aware, you know, that for nice restaurants, it's more important for me to dress nice at a nice restaurant, and, you know, in the Bay Area, like, Mark Zuckerberg can walk in a hoodie and jeans, and lots of people who aren't Mark Zuckerberg can do that. Whereas if I walk in and dress that way, it just means something completely different if I'm in a hoodie. And the day that I was at the Elmwood Cafe, I was literally wearing a hoodie.
When you are conscious of the fact that you're kind of modulating your body language to appear smaller in order to make people around you more comfortable, do you ever feel resentful that you have to do that?
Oh, absolutely. There are times when you're like, you know, I joke about it sometimes about, you know, how, you know, a white person can return a rotten head of lettuce to a diamond store and get store credit, you know, like, it's just sort of like, whereas if I buy a shirt, walk outside, then take it back, they're like, no, what are you talking about? With the receipt, you know what I mean? So it's like, there's a sense where sometimes I feel like in situations where I totally am justified in, like, being able to sort of out somebody, or being like, you're on the wrong side of this, I have to be like, hey, I know it's not your fault. I'm sure it's your manager. However, it just turned out that from what I've looked into, there's a finger in my food. You know, it's just like that. I know that I should just be able to go, hey! That was one of the things about the Elmwood Cafe, is that I didn't make a big loud deal about it, because at the time we were like, Ferguson was still fresh in people's mind, Mike Brown, like, there was just Eric Garner. There was just a sense that, like, I literally thought, like, if I get loud, I should have every right to get loud, angry, and scream in that moment because of what they had done. But I knew if I did and made a scene, then the cops do show up, and then it's suddenly that thing about, like, you know, where does that lead?
So what would make it feel resolved? Like, what would you like to say to them if this conversation were to continue with them?
You know, I think that this is, it's funny, we're living in a political season right now where it's super important for white people to not only recognize their white privilege and how the, you know, white supremacy has helped them in ways they don't even see, and to sort of recognize that and to go, how can I use this for good? And so for me, the Elmwood Cafe was on a path of, like, we're going to try to straighten this up in the entire Bay Area, which would have taken us to a whole new place, which I would have been happy to be a part of that and happy to see that and happy to help out with that. But clearly, once they realize the heat had passed, they're able to retreat into, oh, I can just go back to being normal and nobody's thinking about me anymore. And now the lines are out the door again.
To what degree do you feel like that failure is driven by laziness? I mean, I'm sure just it's the path of least resistance is to go back to normal, versus to what degree is it really some degree of unconscious bias or racism on their part?
I mean, I think unconscious bias promotes laziness. Like, I think that, like, you know, if you're, for example, if you have a magic refrigerator and every time you open up your magic refrigerator, it's full, you go, that's where food comes from, you know? And I think that white privilege can lead white people to sort of believe, like, well, it's fine now for me. And they think if it's fine from them, then it's fine. Like, you hear white people say, I never see the cops harass anybody. Well, yeah, like, you're not, you know, your eyes are not the all-seeing eyes of all. So I think that the privilege promotes the laziness.
That's comedian W. Kamau Bell. He hosts United Shades of America on CNN and the podcast Politically Reactive, which he does with fellow comic Hari Kondabolu. Kamau's debut comedy album, Semi-Prominent Negro, is out now. That's it for our series, Who Is This Restaurant For? We'd love to hear your thoughts on the series, so please connect with me or the show on Twitter and Instagram at TheSporkful or on Facebook at facebook.com/sporkful. You can also drop me an email, dan@sporkful.com. And if you like the series, we hope you'll consider sharing it with your friends on social media so the conversation can continue. This show is a production of WNYC Studios and The Sporkful. It's produced by Ann Sani and me, editing help from Shoshana Gold, engineering help from Bill O'Neill, music help from Black Label Music. Special thanks to Paula Schumann. Our next episode goes up October 31st. Until next time, I'm Dan Pashman.
And I'm Lindsay Leslie from Baltimore, Maryland, reminding you to eat more, eat better, and eat more better.